Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Gemma, thank you very much for that. Now, an investigation into human trafficking is underway following the discovery of 14 people in a refrigerated container on a ferry to Rosslare on Monday. It's believed the 12 adults and two children had been forced to cut a hole in the container as they struggled to breathe. Well, we're joined now by local independent TD for Wexford, Verona Murphy, and by Fianna Fáil TD, James Lawless. And you're both welcome to the programme this evening. I might come to yourself, James Lawless, first, and your reaction to this human trafficking.
Yes, good evening, Sarah. Good evening, Verona. Well, look, I suppose the first reaction is relief that this didn't end up in fatalities. I'm reminded of the incident in Essex 2 or 3 years ago when 39 migrants were trapped in a lorry, refrigerated lorry, and died. And it was really heartbreaking reading the messages that those people were sending out at the time to loved ones via social media and so forth, trying to leave messages behind, because unfortunately they all died. So look, that was escaped here, but it's really, I suppose it highlights to me the plight that people are in, and sometimes it suggests that people are taking an easy ride to come to Ireland or to travel to Western countries. And I think this highlights there's nothing easy or attractive or in any way comfortable or even safe about these kind of crossings. People are taking desperate measures to try to get here. Mm. And I think that really puts pay to this kind of open borders, hop, skip and a jump narrative. It's just not true. People are doing desperate things in desperate ways and they nearly lost their lives, and thank God they didn't.
Verona, you're obviously former president of the Road Haulage Association, so you would have an insight into how something like this happens.
Yes, Sarah, it's very difficult. I mean, this obviously there's a criminal investigation, so we do need to be mindful of that. I do feel, however, that those who are involved and proven to be involved should face the full rigours of the law. As James said, we're brought back to what happened in Essex. They have received very severe sentences, and it doesn't seem to have been enough of a deterrent for this to be happening, because clearly these people had to be assisted. I mean, what happened generally is that the traffickers themselves are able to identify whether the number plate of a vehicle is for Ireland or England. And generally, England is usually the destination that people are trying to get to for whatever reason, but often they will understand that an Irish registered truck is going in that direction as well via the Landbridge, even though we have difficulties with that now. Mm. And I think there has to be very serious implications for those who are found to be involved. It's just an absolute miracle that we don't have any deaths on our hands. You know, I think there was some confusion that the UK emergency services had been contacted, and I think that is why it's particularly thought that the people themselves believed they were destined for the UK.
Yeah. Eamon Ryan, I don't know if you heard him, Verona, speaking this morning, but he said trafficking can't be eliminated completely. I do wonder, though, do you think more can be done to stop it?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a failing here on the, like, you know, whatever about our immigration teams, we have no control over this when people land in the country. But on the port side, the continental side of Belgium and France, there are failings. And I know that from my experience as being the past president of the Irish Road Haulage Association, we would know that the safest port regarding immigration is actually Le Havre, for which we have very little sailings. And we have increased our traffic on the Belgium and Cherbourg side now. But I think it's up to certainly the Department of Foreign Affairs on the Irish side to combine with the French side to see what can be done to improve this. The onus can't be always levelled at the haulier. I mean, there's talks about cameras in trailers. Cameras, these are vehicles that are driven by one individual. And let me tell you something, all it means is adding another expense for a camera to be put in the back of a trailer, because these people are very proficient at what they're doing.
That's not necessarily the answer you'd think. One other suggestion being put forward by the Migrant Rights Centre, James Lawless, is that Ireland needs to provide more safe and legal challenges of migration to ensure people don't have to risk their lives in this way. What do you think of that suggestion?
I think it's not a bad one. I mean, one thing that strikes me, if there is an extent of economic migration, which there probably is amongst many the people arriving here, wouldn't it be better to create, for example, a working visa scheme for people who genuinely want to come here for economic reasons and work and get a job? And some, you know, I don't think it's the majority by any means, but some of the people arriving here seeking international protection and different schemes perhaps have an economic motivation. Wouldn't it be better to actually just siphon that off altogether and say, well, look, if you want to work in construction, if you want to work in hospitality, there's different sectors from different countries that might welcome additional workforce. Let's do that properly through a visa scheme. But just going back to the penalties that were touched on a few moments ago, there is legislation in the statute books. The Criminal Law Human Trafficking Act 2008 makes it punishable by up to a life sentence for individuals involved in human trafficking. And we on the Justice Committee, which I chair, we processed a revision of that only this year, 2023, or last year now, 2023, to look at that again. So there is law on the statute books.
Okay, so the deterrents are there if people are caught. I suppose the question is then, how do you catch them? Because it does appear that if those migrants hadn't made the call themselves because they were in fear of their lives, that it's very likely they would have come through.
I suppose two things could have happened. They could have come through, or they could have died.
Or they could have died, exactly. So neither of, I mean, obviously both terrible options and very potentially very tragic options in one of those instances. But the point being, it's unlikely this is the only case.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. I think that's probably, I would defer to Verona in terms of what the haulage industry is doing, and I wouldn't put the blame at them at all. But I'm sure there's many drivers unwillingly and unwittingly have additional cargo in the back of the trucks that is not supposed to be there, and people hopping on. And I suppose being aided and abetted by very unscrupulous individuals who are profiting from this. Mm. Unfortunately, in the Essex case, some of the individuals were Irish, actually, that were subsequently prosecuted. It went before the UK courts, but there was a couple of Irish people involved in that, and really they should hang their hat in shame, anyone that's profiting from these kind of enterprises.
So separately then, Verona, we also have seen Rosslare obviously has been the scene of protests against the housing of asylum seekers in the former Great Southern Hotel, there has been some...
Just to rephrase that, Sarah, they're actually protesting because there was planning permission for a nursing home.
Yes.
Rosslare already has quite a number. It has two actually IPAS centres already, and it accommodates quite a number of Ukrainian refugees, so they're not protesting about that. They are protesting about the fact that a nursing home is what planning was granted for, and they are protesting because they want that nursing home in place and the 60 jobs that it was supposed to provide.
Mm. We're going to be speaking to John Cook a little later on, and he's been speaking to people who are sleeping in tents in this extremely cold weather because there's nowhere else for them to go. And I know you'll know that there are international protection, hundreds of international protection applicants who have been given tents and sleeping outside in the bitterly cold weather. I understand there are issues with planning and there's a real need for a nursing home in Rosslare. But what do you say to people who say there's an emergency issue here with people who are literally sleeping on the streets and they have nowhere to go?
Well, I think it's an absolute failing to say that we are allowing people to come into the country and the best that we can actually offer them is a tent. I think it's a disgrace. And I don't think that reducing social welfare rates or giving them tents or giving them 75 euros a week is going to mean anything other than those numbers are going to increase. I think from the point of view of what's happening in Rosslare, there is quite a number of refugees and asylum seekers already resident in Rosslare. And the difficulty is that we now have a situation where there is an exemption of any planning with regard to housing, emergency accommodation for asylum seekers or refugees. And the issue with that is that we actually have a massive oversaturation, particularly in remote and rural parts of Ireland, where services are not available. It is affecting the resident population, but it is also of no value to those who are coming here seeking asylum. Mm. Because you take Hookhead, Sarah, and I've said this to you before, where we have a village called Hookless, and it can accommodate, it is currently accommodating up to 300 Ukrainian refugees, but it is at the furthest most southerly point of Ireland. And in order for them to try and integrate or even to avail of a cup of coffee, it's about 20 kilometres of a drive. And I don't think that that is acceptable, whereby we expect people to live there for a long, long time, as it's turned out to be, but we are not able to integrate them into communities. And in many cases, you know, people say to me, everybody is putting a spin on this.
Is it better than being in tents, though, Verona, in the short term? Like, that's the question.
But I think, no,
in the middle of winter.
The problem we have is that we can't provide housing for 13,000 nationals. So we're not going to continue, like if we continue to
But that's not the question that I asked, though, because I do understand the concerns that you're raising,
course,
and, you know, lots of communities around the country
not.
Are raising those concerns. But you're saying it's an unacceptable situation that we're offering tents to people coming into the country. Well, actually some people are being offered other accommodation, like for example the Great Southern is trying to be prepared for people so that they don't have to be offered tents, but the community is protesting against it. So the question is it better to offer people some place to go in emergency accommodation
rather than tents? The community are not protesting against that. The community understand that there is planning policy for a nursing home. You can't just railroad a community.
Right.
I mean, if you were...
Okay,
like,
yeah, no, you've made that point. I understand.
James, what do you think?
What point?
If a community is advised that there is to be 400 residents accommodated in that facility, that's the equivalent of building 200 homes. Now, it would take anybody through the planning process approximately 2 to 3 years to get that planning off the ground. So
James,
the community lives in harmony with the services available that go with that planning application.
Yeah, thanks. So, look, I hear what Verona's saying. I don't think it's necessarily true or fair to say that all the centres are being placed into very remote areas. I mean, look, you know, there's plenty of centres in Dublin, there's plenty of centres in my constituency of North Kildare, which is the heart of the commuter belt. Look, we've Eastall, we've Ringsend, we've Ballsbridge just in the city centre. So look, the reality is these centres are going everywhere. Remote areas, urban areas, rural areas, commuter areas. So centres are going in everywhere. And I suppose the thinking behind that is to try to get away from the old model of sort of prison-like direct provision centres in a couple of sites, not very conducive to integration, not part of the community, very much siloed and sort of walled off in every sense from everybody else. But that is not without challenge. And one of the things that I think needs to happen at this stage, we've seen in the last probably 18 months to 2 years, a huge ramp up. I think it probably will steady off now, but we've seen a huge ramp up. We're now achieving the European norms in terms of the numbers coming in. We had a very low level of inner migration for the past 10-15 years. So I think it's time now, but now we've had that for maybe a year or 2 years. So now we need to go from the emergency phase, which is an understandable response to Ukraine and to the increase in international protections elsewhere, into an operational phase.
It's a bit late, to get out of an emergency phase. I mean, November 2022, Catherine Day, the former Secretary General of the European Commission, November 2022 now, I'm talking about, recommended to the government that they urgently use emergency powers to build two reception centres on state-owned land by May 2023, that deadline well passed, and another four by the end of 2023. She said the state had to take up its responsibilities and using the private sector option of hotels was not the right way forward.
Exactly.
That was what, 13 months ago?
Yeah, so I disagree with her on one thing. I don't know if emergency powers is the answer, and it goes back to something I agree with Verona on this. I think that what we've had, and I think it's understandable for the emergency response, but I think we need to move off it when we're moving to operational phase. Any development that goes into an area is very, very often unpopular. It could be a residential development. It could be a new nursing home. It could be anything. It could be new industry. It could be new use of land. There's always going to be local unrest and questions asked. But because of the normal planning process, there's an opportunity for submissions to be made. There's public
meetings.
But Verona's
point is that the planning process is being overridden in instances.
And I'm agreeing with her. And I'm actually saying the same thing. I'm saying that that gives an opportunity, even though it may still be unpopular, people can digest it. They can think about it. There's a little bit of time and a little bit of a pause for thought. Changes can be made on the basis of local submissions, like local community groups can mobilise and put in their submissions, etc. None of that is there at the moment in these scenarios. And what I'm saying is, while that was acceptable in an emergency phase a year or 18 months ago, I think it's important that we begin to wean off that now and say that we cannot have this practice of saying
every
available...
How long would that take then? Because in order to wean off it, you have to have places for people to go.
Well, for a start, well, we know this is happening now for the guts of 18 months or more. We know the increase is there. So I would think that there should be planning in place right now to say, let's build more centres, rather than identifying every available bit of roof space in the country and say, can we put a few beds under it and house migrants there? That's not a sustainable long-term solution.
We're told today that a white paper is going to be brought to the Cabinet in January for six centres to be built. But I mean, I don't know if there's any timelines being put on that.
And I would hope
again,
that they would go through the planning process.
That was recommended, you know, in November 2022.
Yeah.
Verona, I might just final word to yourself.
No, I'm afraid they actually won't go through the planning process, James, because the legislation that has been brought in means that if you're building emergency accommodation and it could be 10 stories high, you don't need planning permission. That's part of the problem.
And
it's
I'm
not about
you,
planning permission just for the public consultation element. Planning is about making provision for the influx of the population. That would mean doctors, school places, transport. It is a very different thing to place a number of people in large quantities in Balls Bridge where they can access public transport and Hookhead or Hookless Village.
Just to come back,
very, very different.
Very briefly, James.
Yeah, just on the Cathan Day report, that was a report that was commissioned to end direct provision. When this government was formed, it was pre-Ukraine, pre-COVID. There was a lot of things changed in the last 3 or 4 years. So the Cathan Day report, I think, has to be seen as a product of the request. The request was, how do we end direct provision?
Yeah.
It was not anticipated when Cathan Day wrote that report that we would have a massive increase in the numbers of international protection and that Ukraine would start and 100,000 people would arrive.
And yet she was still
here.
Recommending, even before that we had this serious problem that we have
it's
at the moment, she still recommended that we get to those two reception centres built by May 2023.
Yeah, but it's not comparable. The numbers are not comparable at all.
All right. I'm just getting some news in that the government has done a U-turn on housing 50 male asylum seekers at a premises in Carlow and said families will be offered shelter. So if we get any more information on that, that's Ciara Phelan reporting that we'll bring that to you later in the programme. Thank you both very much for joining us this evening. That is Rona Murphy, who is an independent TD for Wexford, and James Lawless, Fianna Fáil TD.